we know that we are compelled by Christ to move beyond just these four walls as a church.
And we want to be a church that continues to look beyond our walls with the love of Jesus to bless the socks off this community.
And as a church, we feel led to be a church that is for the good of our city.
Are we ready to jump in this morning? Good. Wow. I was talking with Leon this morning. Leon, he plays the percussion back here, and he informed me that there are 6 people in Dallas that tune in every week. So I want to give a shout out to everybody in Dallas. We see you. We love you. We're glad you're with us. We're glad that Dallas exists and that you exist. So good to have you here with us this morning. Thank you for tuning in. And of course, thank you to all of you for being here this morning. Somebody asked me a great question last week. And I always love it when people ask a good question. And they ask me, when you say up here that you're here to help us heal, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, that's a good question. And what I mean by that is that I believe that healing is a movement towards wholeness. And that's what I want for you, wholeness. And that healing in that movement towards wholeness is about integration. And it's about changing and shifting the internal dialogue that goes on inside of our lives towards acceptance and compassion, not only for ourselves, but for actual people in the world. So that's what we're moving towards. And this morning, what we get to do is we get to step into a new rhythm as we move towards Christmas. And each week, we're going to be looking at different characters in the story of Christmas found in the beginning of the gospel narratives around Jesus and the Jesus story and how Jesus came to be in the world. And this morning, we're going to jump in with Joseph. Now, Joseph is a character in the story that's going to reveal to us what love actually looks like, which is the journey that we're stepping on. It's love actually. What does love look like in actual time, space, and in a human, and in a human interaction with other humans? And we're going to see that in the story of Joseph and then visit some other characters along the way. Now, the thing that strikes me about Joseph, that there's not much said about Joseph in the gospel narratives. There's Luke and there's Matthew that probably give us the lengthiest information about the life of Joseph. But beyond that, Mark doesn't say anything, and John mentions him a few times, but not at length. So we're going to look at the narrative out of the gospel of Matthew. And so I would invite you to read along as we look at Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. Read along with me. This is how the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace. He had in mind to divorce her quietly, but after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." This clears it up right here. Some immediate observations as we look at the story on the surface. What I see in my immediate observation of the text is I see an avoidance of humiliation in Joseph. I see a fear of losing control so that you're not going to be controlled. There's fear in the narrative. And then I see a person who's attempting to uphold their persona and their reputation. And what I see in the life of Joseph in just a few short verses is that he starts in what is called a life of order. And this is typically the arc of our human existence. We begin by creating order, making sense of our reality, and then we move into a time of disorder where things literally start to fall apart and crack, and we're asked to step into rethinking or reevaluating our reality. And then the last step is to reorder. So as you move through that progression of order to disorder to reordering and rethinking about, so what is my life now after all of these things have happened? And in just 7 verses, we see kind of this progression from these 3 moves. So we look first at order. Joseph is described in the text by the author Matthew as being a righteous man. It says that he was faithful to the law. Now, it's important. The author wants us to know something very specific about Joseph, that he's not just Joseph, he's not just a carpenter, but he's also faithful to the law. And when they say faithful to the law, they mean faithful to Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, which God gives to the people. And this is how I want you to be. This is how I want you to live. This is how I want you to order your life. And so Joseph is a righteous man, and he's seen by others as a righteous man, which is a big deal. It's like in our context, when we say things about each other, like, well, that person's a really godly person. Like, what do we mean by that when we say that person's godly, or that person really loves Jesus, or that person really takes the Bible seriously? There's all this language that we use to try to attempt to describe who a person is or how we experience this person in our society. But Joseph begins his life in a life of order, and he begins with two very important questions. And these are the questions that we as human beings, as we come into the world, it's like we're given a manual. And those first two questions are right there at the beginning stages of life. And the questions are, who am I and how do I fit in the world? So whether you're consciously aware or not, those questions really do drive you through life. Who am I and how do I fit in the world? So we come into existence and we start to give meaning to those two questions. And then we attempt to answer those questions by creating a personality. And our personality really is our personal reality. It's how we define what is real to us. And it's how we develop what I called last week a persona. And a persona is like, this is how people experience me as an individual. This is my identity. And then we start to learn what roles we play in society, and we start functioning in those roles. We're actually creating a sense of who we are, answering that question. Who am I? How do I fit? I'm a loving mother. I'm a teacher. I'm a middle child, right? There's a whole narrative behind that, isn't there, middle children? I'm the middle child in the sequence. We're role-playing. And what happens many times is then we get overly attached to that part of our personal reality. But the problem is that isn't really who we are, not in our essence, but we give meaning to that personal reality and say, this is who I am. And if you think about most of the conversations that we have with people, and I've said this before, one of the first questions that oftentimes comes up when you're meeting people is what? What do you do? And when we go into that question, what are they really asking? Where do you fit in society? Like, what category do I put you in? How do I describe you? What do you do? Now, in order for us to learn how to develop and live in this existence, we develop what is called an ego. And we talked about this last week. And I described the ego as that part of you that is the false self. So you have your true self and your false self. So let's have a little fun with the false self, this character that we developed. We wear costumes, we wear outfits, we wear masks, and then we perform. And why do we do this, friends? Because we're looking for meaning, we're looking for applause, we're looking for safety, and we're looking for a sense of belonging. That's how we operate when we're living out of this false self. Now, your false self isn't bad. I don't want you to sit here and start judging that part of you. That is a necessary part of our development as human beings. But what happens with the false self is that it begins to attach to myth and to power structures. Your false self has what is called an intuition. And that intuition that lives in the false self starts to begin to realize that you literally are nothing. It's a shadow. It's not really who you are. And so that shadow moves out into the world and starts to attach and believe that it is what it does in the world. What do you do? Where do you fit? And when it achieves and it accomplishes and it conquers and it wins, it becomes very attached. And then you start to believe that that is really who you are in the world. You are what you have, what you do, and what other people say you are. The problem is that that ego part tends to attach itself to productivity and achievement, status symbols like wealth and the acquisition of things. And then here's the real ticker. It attaches itself to your body image. And then you start to believe that you literally are your image, your body. And so we have a lot of narrative around our bodies that start to spin out into the world. And then we create what are called binaries and boxes. And when I say binaries, I mean two different entities. And then we take those and we place those in a box because we crave certainty and reality. We want to know what we can know so that we have a sense of feeling safe and ordered. That is what I call creating an ordered life. We got to find ways to feel good about ourselves. And so we create these characters in order to put that out in the world so that we can feel good about who we are. And guess what? Power structures and hierarchies promote that stuff and really bring it into reality. And so what we do in the West is we are really dualistic in our thinking. It's this or that. It's black or white. So we live in this concept of dualism. We are dualistic creatures that we see things as split and separate. And religious systems love to use this kind of language in order to control narratives. Religious systems are incredible at building up certainty and safety. And the problem with staying in certainty and safety is that you literally camp in that reality, and that becomes the box that you live in. And we human beings are literally not designed to live in boxes. We can't live in a box. We're not even created to live in these boxes. And yet we find ourselves contained and we start to camp in certainty. So imagine with me staying in that narrative your entire life. You're like living in this box. Imagine the void that it creates inside of us that will never be fully satisfied. And so we live with that void and we become empty. And then we develop what are called coping mechanisms. And those coping mechanisms turn into what are called addictions. And addictions many times are just numbing agents. We develop these numbing agents and we get on what is called the hedonic treadmill. And when we get on that hedonic treadmill, we start running under the narrative that I'll never be good enough. I'll never achieve what I need to achieve. I am what I have, what I do, and what other people say that I am. Joseph is a righteous man. That has got to feel really good in a religious system that actually upholds that as the ideal. You're a religious man. That means you're obedient to Torah. This is how you're known in society. But here's the thing with religious systems and these power structures that we see all throughout the world. They're boxes that we literally have learned how to hide ourselves in. And we get into these systems and we have what is called a buttressed ego. And that ego gets held up by these systems, by our obedience, by our radical doing for God. And then that ego gets buttressed up and it holds up. And these systems, these religious systems, have a way of buttressing the ego that I can hide behind the Bible. I can hide behind my good behavior. I can hide behind all the things that I do or the ways in which I want people to see and experience me, my personal reality. And these religious systems are what I would call ego manufacturing organizations. They're EMOs. Let's not do EMOs. As my friend Quincy says, those are mad emos. Lots of emotion, right? That gets attached to an EMO. So we're like an EMO organization that's creating ego. And we're reinforcing it. We're holding it up. And I think, when I look at Joseph, I think that Joseph has a buttressed ego. It's held up. And then the creator, in the creator's infinite wisdom, steps into Joseph's story and says, no, we're not doing this. And he cracks open the container and he begins to invite Joseph into a deeper sense of reality and says, this is your personal reality, but you are not just defined by what you do. You are not defined what other people say that you are. There is more to Joseph than just those things. And so the creator cracks open the container. And when the container cracks open, it feels very devastating to our humanity. And this is how I would say, welcome to disorder. And I think disorder is actually a gift of grace. Doesn't feel like a gift, but it's inviting us to look at what is really going on because Joseph is betrothed to Mary. Now, in this time and in this point in history, when you're betrothed to somebody, that is equivalent to being married to that person. So in order to become unbetrothed, unhitched, you would have to go through the divorce process. So because they haven't fully consummated the marriage, they haven't finished the ceremony, it's this betrothment period where there's a time that's set aside for them to get ready for one another. And in this time period,
Mary finds herself to be pregnant. Now we've got a problem. These two teenagers, maybe 16, have a huge problem. And anytime there's a problem, our tendency is to want to step in and fix the problem. And so Joseph, with his buttressed ego, steps in and it's like, well, how do I create a plan to keep order? Because that's what we do when we're living out of the ego. How do I keep order? How do I maintain my reputation and my persona? Because it's all being pulled apart. He's being invited to step into acceptance, into compassion, into what is, to shift his personality, his personal reality into something deeper, even though he did everything right. Listen, if your life is driven by fear, if you believe that you will never have what you want, or I need to have what I love instead of loving what I actually have, you're going to get disappointed. And be careful not to soak and saturate yourself in disappointment, because when you soak and saturate in disappointment, you end up living a disappointed life. And that's not how you were created to be in the world. This disorder is a gift of grace, because the disorder can actually teach us to move into deeper acceptance and into deeper reality and experiencing the joy of letting go. That's where the joy is. Living with a hand of openness and curiosity, going, what's next? That's the invitation. Joseph is at a fork in the road, and he's about to experience a death, in a sense. He's about to experience something where he has to let go so that he could step into this next season of life that opens him up to more curiosity, that opens him up to more wonder and joy, and not being driven by fear, control, not being driven by the narratives that other people say that we have to be in the world. Joseph is about to go from being righteous to being real. How about that, folks? Do you want to go from being righteous to real? And no longer just being obedient, but experiencing the love and the reality of who Christ is in the world, going into the realness and stepping into what is, this is what I call the invitation into the next space of what is next. What's next? Now, all of us in the room have parts of us that we would say are unwanted parts. We all have these things inside of us, but these are unwanted parts. And there are things about our personalities that we don't want people to see. How often have you said or heard other people say, if people really knew me, they wouldn't like what they see? Are you with me? If they really, really knew me, these are the unwanted parts. I don't want people to see these parts of me. I love what the psychologist Carl Jung said about this aspect of these unwanted parts. He said, the repression of unwanted parts creates the personal shadow. And he taught us that if we disown a part, it turns against us. And many of us experience that turning against of this other character. Have you ever stopped to think that maybe those unwanted parts of you are actually trying to protect you as a possibility? They might be there, that you created them because they taught you how to survive and be safe in systems that are unpredictable, because life comes at you pretty hard. And some of us grew up in situations that were extremely difficult. So we had to create parts that kept us safe and alive. And then the very things that we reject in ourselves, have you noticed? We are quick to reject them when we see them in other people. We reject these things in ourselves and then we see them in someone else, and it agitates the crud out of us and we wonder why. This is called projection. It's fun, right? And we all do this thing. So maybe it's time to stop beating ourselves up, stop beating up others, and stepping out of that cycle. Listen, your brain has what is called a hypothalamus, and this hypothalamus, when it activates, it clicks into your autonomic nervous system, and your autonomic nervous system has two core directives: keep you safe and keep you alive, right? They're actually there. They're there to keep you safe. The fact that you're here this morning means that you did it, you made it. I was joking with my friend Jim here this morning. He is 82, right, Jim? 82, and I'm like, how many Sundays is that? And we dictated it's somewhere like well over 4,000 Sundays. And then we started talking about cruddy Mondays. And then I asked him, like, why are we hating on Monday so much? Monday didn't do anything to us. But you made it, Jim. You made it this far, right? To 82. You made it through this many Sundays. And here you are, walking, breathing, living Jim in all of his gymness and awesomeness. But that stuff that gets stirred up inside of us and we think, how in the heck did I get here? How did I make it this far? Hey, I can tell you this, friend, stepping into disorder is terrifying. Nobody in this room wants to change. We don't. We don't want to step into uncertainty. In fact, I've heard it said that we would soon rather die than change. Because it's terrifying. We don't want to step into the unknown. Because we can't control it. We can't dominate it. We can't manipulate it. It's like, well, what is it that I'm stepping into? I don't know. There's wonder and there's joy in this next thing that could open you up into something new and something deeper and something more beautiful. But Joseph is invited to step into uncertainty. And the question that I would ask of Joseph is like, well, what are you afraid of losing? My reputation. The thing that I've actually buttressed up. I mean, I have a place in society. I'm faithful to the law. I'm a carpenter. Now I'm a husband to Mary. And all of that is starting to change and it's starting to crack and he's starting to lose all of that, but none of that's real anyway. These are just things that people put on us or that we put on ourselves. They're just costumes, but they're not real. And when your ego intuits, like, that part of me is really not real anyway. So why am I afraid of losing what's not real? And stepping into what's real. And Joseph does what so many of us do. He starts to create a plan, because literally when the world is falling apart, what do? We create a plan. Something like, this is going to keep me safe and alive. So he decides to divorce Mary quietly because he doesn't want to humiliate her, because he actually loves her. And he also doesn't want to lose his reputation, because the very law that he loves in Deuteronomy says that he has the right to stone this woman. So he can bring Mary out and have a public disgrace, put shame on her, and actually stone her to death. That's what the Torah says. And Joseph says, no, that's not love, actually. That's something else. And he changes the narrative and he shifts away and he decides to leap in and somersault into whatever is next, into this, I don't know what's coming, but he takes this next step. And instead of going through with the plan, Joseph has a dream. And in his dream, the angel of the Lord instructs him, here's what actually is going on, gives him what is real. And then he wakes up and now he steps into reorder. See, many of us are living in a dream state and we think our dream state is the real state. But what's happening is that Joseph has invited into living into changing his personal reality and stepping into what is really real. Because many times, friends, let's be honest, fear shows up in our lives disguised as practicality, but it's still fear. The Creator, in the Creator's infinite wisdom, invites Joseph to wake up and to see what's actually going on. That there's something that's going to come into the world that's literally going to change and bring the world to its healing and salvation. And so Joseph accepts what is without knowing what is to come. And because Joseph accepts it, he's then given the invitation to actually name the child. And so Joseph names the child because the child isn't his. And when he names the child, what he is saying is, I accept the invitation to step into the unknown. I accept what is real. I'm attaching myself to this child that is literally going to heal and transform the entire universe. And so by attaching to this woman and to this child, Joseph is now oneing with these two created human beings, and he's stepping into this new narrative that's going to literally open up the world. He accepts what is. He surrenders. He lets go. And because he lets go, healing and salvation flow into the world. The entire world is about to experience healing. This is how the Messiah, Jesus, came to be in the world. This is how this little seed cannot be contained in a box. Seeds that are in boxes don't grow. It expands it. It breaks it open for the healing and salvation of the world. I want to read this poem to you. I found this last week, and it really spoke to the tenderness of my heart. And I want to share it with you Listen, sorrow prepares you for joy. It violently sweeps everything out of your house so that new joy can find space to enter. It shakes the yellow leaves from the bough of your heart so that fresh green leaves can grow in their place. It pulls up rotten roots so that new roots beneath have room to grow. Whatever sorrow shakes from your heart, far better things will take their place. And what I love about Joseph is he's moving from doing things for God now to learning how to be with God. He's stopping doing for, and now he's moving into what is called the art of withing. As my good friend Quincy says, once you see what you are withing with, you without. And I was like, I don't know what's happening right now, Q, but I'm all in for this conversation. You literally rid yourself of the contaminants that are living inside of the container when you realize who you're withing with. And when you realize who you're withing with, then you can without. Because you understand that the person you're withing with is literally called Emmanuel, Jesus. What does Jesus mean? God with us. So if we're withing with the great wither, how can we go without? Do you feel the Dr. Seuss energy happening right now? And listen, friends, Christmas is about withing. That is what it's about. Christmas shop is about withing. Christmas, the gift, is about withing with the true gift and receiving all that comes with the gift. And as we step into that art of withing and we somersault into the next delightful question of Christmas is, what's next? What's coming next? What could possibly be next? And listen, if you decide to keep your current personal reality intact and you want to go back to the egoic self and you want to live out of your false narrative and you want to buttress up your ego, I have good news from you. The porch light will always be on. And when you want to come home, that light is on. And when you want to change and when you want to step into a new reality, Jesus will be there, ready to receive you, ready to give you the gift of healing and freedom. Healing and freedom are always, always available for you, my friends, always available. Let me leave you with this question. What's keeping you from withing with the one who is with us? Sit with that as we step into this next song. What is keeping you from withing with the one who is with us?